You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. In observance of this Memorial Day, Peace Watch presents this documentary of a veteran's sangha, or retreat, that took place in August of 2002. In this piece, we offer the voices of veterans telling the stories of their adventures in war never before shared. The retreat was organized by Vietnamese Buddhist monk, teacher, and Nobel Prize laureate Thich Nhat Hanh at Stonehill College in Easton, Massachusetts. It offered an opportunity for veterans to tell their stories in a non-judgmental environment.
I'm going to read a piece that I wrote last year, one that woke me up at 3 o'clock in the morning and wouldn't let me stop writing until it was finished about lunch. It's called You Know Who I Am, or Whatever You Ever Heard About Non-Vets Is True. You know who I am. At least you should by now. Many times I've done my best to keep myself hidden, but you can spot me if you really want to. I'm that long-haired, scruffy-looking motorcycle dude. I love riding, man. It's the freedom. When I got out of the crotch, I wouldn't settle for anything else. I'm that real quiet guy who doesn't often participate. If I look at you at all, it's into your eyes, through the back of your head, and off into the distance. They call it the 1,000-yard stare. Want to know what I see? Maybe not, unless you're sure you're ready. I'm that CEO of that multi-million-dollar express company. I came back from the jungle and hit the ground running. I've exorcised all my demons. Or have I? And hey, you've seen me living on the outside of town. I'm closer to my dogs than I am to people. Sure, I like some people, but not too much. 30 years ago, many of my friends left suddenly without saying goodbye. So I've learned not to get too close. I used to be a nurse, till I couldn't stand the pain any longer. We met during Tet of 68, when almost all of you came in on a bloody stretcher. After all these years, I still remember your face. I wonder how you went home. You know who I am yet? I went away some years ago. Only parts of me came back. You can pick me out of a crowd of thousands. I'm the one who's had gray hair since he was 20 years old. When you come into the room, I'll be the guy sitting with his back against the wall. I don't like surprises, especially loud ones, or the ones that come from behind me. Don't look for me at the parades or the other flag-waving events. I've had it with all that drill team. But search me out. Maybe you can get me to talk. But it's not going to be easy for someone like me. Those dark places where my stuff hides are often too scary, especially for me. And I remember when you spit on me and called me names. So it's hard for me to trust or to feel safe. But if you get me to talk, just listen, really listen. And I've got some great stories. I'll make you piss yourself laughing, or I'll turn you into a sobbing mass with tales of my losses. I'll make your heart thump wildly with the fear I've known, I'll open up my chest and show you that spot where that big missing chunk of my heart used to be. Maybe I'll even show you my scars, if you have X-ray vision. I'll fill you with the rage that I have inside. Maybe so much so that you'll never send another generation of young people like us to a place like that. Yeah, you know who I am. I'm your lover and your brother, your sister, your wife, your husband. I'm your ex, and I'm your future. I'm everywhere and I'm anywhere. Frankly, I'm the one who helped make it easy for you to be where you are. And if I don't want to be found, I can be nowhere at all. But don't stop looking or listening. I'm out here if you really want to find me. You'll know who I am.
The ripple effect. I often go to the wall to remind myself of how blessed I am. My father's name is not on the wall, but his heart is sometimes there. I always cry when I see the black granite with too many names to count. I cry for the children who lost their fathers in Vietnam, but mostly I cry for the veterans, because their battle never ends. Most of them carry some guilt for making it out alive. My salty tears are filled with anger and confusion. They sting my face and create their own scars. I am the reason that my father should not feel guilty for having returned from war. I would not be alive if a bullet had taken his life. I would not even get to grieve at this monstrous granite wall, because I would not exist. At times I want to scream this to my father and to the world, but I am silenced by my grief. I am crying the tears that my father and my nation refuse to let flow. I have cried a river of tears which smolder the fire within. At the wall I touch my pain, I see the veteran's pain reflected in the stone. Clarity returns in the reflections on the wall. I see the guilt of a nation divided by war. I see the blood and destruction. But when I look deeper, I see scars. The scars have scabbed over with the threat of reopening and bleeding once again. I am frightened by these scars, even though I have stared them in the face many times. Even though this gash, this scar in the earth, is sealed in stone, sealed with the same stone that has hardened the hearts of so many, the tears seep through and penetrate the soul of all who look deeply. I watch a sad father try to explain the wall to his little child. I walk closer to them to see if he can help me make sense of this place, this war, this pain. "Daddy, why are all these people crying?" asked the young child. I crept even closer and listened with all of my heart, hoping for the magic answer. The father replied, "They cry because they have lost someone dear to them in the war." I walked away feeling like he had not answered my question. Why do I cry? My father did not die in the war. So why do I cry every time I see this stone gash in the earth? Further down the path, I watched a woman with a tear-stained face make a rubbing of a name on the wall. I wondered about this woman and about the name that she had immortalized on a clean white slip of paper. Was that her husband, her brother, her friend, her father? Somehow her pain made the relationship seem unimportant. How many times had she come to this sacred place? How many names did she engrave in paper or in her heart? Was she another ripple affected by the war? Like me, a ripple from the impact? As I read the letters left at the wall, my vision is blurred by the salty raindrops from my eyes. My heart is so full, I feel like it could explode. I lament, I scream silently, I wail. I cry the tears for my father, for all the young soldiers who lost their lives and lost their innocence. If there is nothing else that I can do to relieve this suffering, I can cry the tears.
I must first tell you that that this is the first time that I have written anything about my demons. And I am sure many of us have them. Today I will try to share one of mine with you. I hope that this does not bore you. I want only for you to understand, and maybe it will help me also. You need to know a little about me first. I am a father of two great children, Amy and Vincent, and also have three terrific grandchildren. I'm 54. I went to Vietnam when I was 20. I felt I was, it was my patriotic duty, and I guess my responsibility when my country called, quote, I was drafted, I answered. And as I tried to do with everything, I tried to be the best warrior and the best leader I could be, and as it turned out, maybe too good. It's been 34 years now, and in some ways, it seems like just yesterday. And I've heard people say, it's been over 30 years. Quit whining. Get over it. Get on with your life. Well, I'm not whining. I don't talk about it much. And I have gotten on with my life. But I have realized that I will never get over it. I suppose that's the way it must be. I'll try to explain and maybe describe why it is this way. I mentioned demons, and there are several. They haunt and struggle for a place in my consciousness, and I struggle to keep them under control. Sometimes I win, and sometimes they win. But I know they are always there, and I cannot let my guard down. But let me move on. There is one demon I will share with you. The evil that is with me always, the greatest evil, to take another's life. I confess, not 1, 2, 10, but 10 times 10 plus. Not only the act, but the thrill of the act. This is the ultimate evil. It haunts me still. There is, I believe, an evil inside of me. It is a part of me. It must be. I could not have been so cruel, so cold, so inhuman, unless part of me was evil. Then I felt no remorse or shame. Now, there is not only remorse and shame, but there is very much pain. Once I cared what others thought of me, I guess that was when I felt that there was hope, or maybe some doubt. It no longer matters. The things that I was afraid others would feel, I now know were the things I felt myself. They are inside of me, they are with me, they are what I know I am.
have a need for atonement, but forgiveness never comes. I would know it. I would feel it. There would be peace, and the pain would be gone. I live only to be punished, and I accept my sentence as just. A death penalty would be quick and merciful, but I don't deserve that. I am tired, so tired, and I am sorry, so sorry. I need to rest, I need peace, but the demon will not relinquish its hold, so there is no rest and there is no peace. There is comfort in that I know that at least this consciousness we call life is only temporary. I know not what comes next. I can only hope that my atonement will be completed.
Thank you.
My name is Kevin. I served 173rd Airborne in Vietnam, 1967. I was a member of a small unit, a recon unit, and I spent the better part of the year around Binh Hoa, Thuy Hoa, and Dac Tho. I was wounded three times, two times very minor wounds. My last wound sent me home with a compression fracture of my skull. This story that I'm about to read took place in 1967, November of 1967. I've never told this story before. I've intimated about this story, but I've never told this story before. I would like to preface this story with a belief that I have, that I gained during my time in Vietnam, that killing cannot happen absence of lying, that killing and lying go together hand in hand. Those of you who are familiar with the book of Genesis in the Old Testament will remember the story of Cain and Abel, where Cain, out of jealousy, murders his brother Abel. And God asks him from above, "Cain, where is your brother Abel?" And Abel lies, "What? Am I my brother's keeper?" And there you have a prime example of lying and killing going together. November 1967. Six young men, faces painted green, moving slowly, quietly, under a triple canopy jungle. Six of America's finest, poster boys for the great American dream, raised on God, the flag, apple pie, and Chevrolet. Hard, lean, jump qualified, not a leg in the unit, Strack and GI talk. Hunters all, like their fathers and brothers and friends, back in the world this day, hunting deer or elk, the same, only different. We six hunt slopes and dinks. The quiet is broken by a sound out of place. Freezing amid stride, we look like we're posing for animal crackers. Moments pass as we determine from where the sound comes. As we move closer, we determine the noise to be that of someone crying. A woman in a white owl dye, carrying a small bundle, alone, crying like a kid. She's out of place, doesn't belong here. This is, and I extend apologies to my Native American brother here, Indian country of the worst kind. We make the decision in silence to take this woman, knock her down, tape gag her, tie her, and take her along with us. Two move in to grab her. Four remain to provide cover and security. Now, Murphy's Law applies in the military world as well as in the real world, that when things can go wrong, they will go wrong. Sensing our presence, this young woman takes off running. A single shot, bright red blood froths from her mouth. She dies quickly. No one says a word. We pat her down for anything of intelligence, drag her into the bush, cover her quickly, and DD in silence. 2 days later, we're back in our hooch, smoking herb, getting high, when someone says through the haze of smoke and music, "The bitch shouldn't have run. Serves her dumbass right." That's all that was ever said for her. None of us ever said anything about the dead infant she carried in that small bundle under her arm. Not once. John Wayne lied to us, as did our teachers in school, our moms, our dads, our ministers and priests, our politicians, and they continue to lie to us to this very day. Thank you.
My name is Fred, and I'm a Vietnam vet. I mentioned that the idea that if not this, then not that, or not that, not this. That if it wasn't for Vietnam, I wouldn't be standing in front of you right now. I could wander around with you 4 days and tell war stories. But now I could do the same thing and talk about the miracles that have happened in my life as a result of my experience in Vietnam. I have a deep love and respect for everyone who has been in the sacred veterans circle. And I've had the privilege over the years of being in these circles and witnessing miracles every year. Year after year. Many, many miracles. Claude Thomas was mentioned. Claude Thomas would stand up in a group like this and say, "Before I was 18 years old, I was responsible for the deaths of hundreds, men, women, children, animals." Not only is Claude still alive, he's now a Zen priest. And I started finding my voice in 1991 when the Gulf War was being touted. And it got a lot of us vets out of the closet. And we couldn't keep our mouths shut anymore. And I organized the Vets for Peace chapter. I was asked as a veteran to drive a truck on an aid caravan to El Salvador in 1993. It was a life-changing experience. But I was privileged to be at the University of Central America in San Salvador, which is the Jesuit university, where the 6 Jesuit priests and their housekeeper and her teenage daughter were brutally slaughtered in 1989, November. There was a lot of talk about amnesty that week that we were there, because the UN Truth Commission report had just come out, laying the blame for 99.9% of the atrocities on the military and the death squads and the government of El Salvador. Half of the Salvadoran budget in the years of that war came from our tax money. And so the Jesuits were asked what they would consider justice for this horrendous act. There's a book of photographs there of the bodies and the autopsies. And they said the following. They said, for the soldiers who carried out the killing, who followed the orders, they should be sentenced to 1 year at the beach with a good family. And they said that those that planned the operation and gave the orders should be sentenced to 10 years in the bean fields with the campesinos. And I learned I had a long way to go to become a real peacemaker. Miracle after miracle is Billy up here. Not only is it a miracle, he's still alive. With all the years he literally, or at least in spirit, had the shotgun in his mouth ready to pull the trigger. And now I see him not only alive, but incredibly playful and unbelievably caring. I honor Jim and Big Vince and Little Vince and Tom and everybody else up here for their courage to tell their stories. And all the new people who will invariably show up every year will blow us away. I'm grateful for all of you for cradling our stories over the years. Truly cradling our stories and helping us to heal by doing that, and letting us know that we've helped you to heal, and for welcoming us home.
You're listening to Peace Watch's Memorial Day special, Seekers of the Truth, the Veterans Sangha, a collection of recordings from a retreat held at Stonehill College in Easton, Massachusetts in August 2002. The retreat was organized by Vietnamese Buddhist monk, teacher, and Nobel Peace Prize laureate Thich Nhat Hanh, and it offered an opportunity for veterans to share their stories in a non-judgmental environment. Thanks to KVNF Public Radio in Western Colorado for production assistance. For more information on Thich Nhat Hanh's retreats, visit plumvillage.org or veteransforpeace.org. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. Our associate producer is Angelique Shofar. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett and Adil Hamid of KPFA. It's your financial support that makes this program possible. So please pledge your support through our secure online website at pacifica.org, or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.